And we will endeavor to understand what has passed and imagine what is to come.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Now, here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2025. And I'm now here with Jeff Younger. Jeff, could you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Well, howdy. How are you? Thanks for having me on. My name is Jeff Younger. I'm from the state of Texas in the United States. I was one of the early fathers who was fighting the transgender battle. I spent 11 years trying to protect my son. The entire government of the state of Texas conspired against me. A corrupt judiciary falsified records and did a lot of things, and eventually shipped my son to California right after California passed its transgender kidnapping bills. In the meantime, I was able to coerce the Texas legislature into passing a bill outlawing these practices in Texas. So he went to California, and I had a trial in California in front of an extremely corrupt California judiciary. They violated all their rules. They usually have three judges in family court in California. They collapsed it to one. They denied me all evidence. I went into trial having no evidence from the other side, but the other side got thousands of pages of evidence from me. I was denied independent medical exams, the whole thing, the usual corruption that you probably have heard before. My son was chemically castrated last year around December. I'm disallowed from seeing my sons. I can't call them, can't write them letters, and can't visit them. So what I've been doing is I talk publicly. I have a YouTube channel for them where I pass on the lessons my father's taught me. And my sons have reached the biblical age of attainment. They're 13 years old. They're past the age of 12. And so that's what I'm really focused on right now. I've been able to pass laws in three other states in the United States. I'm working on three more. And my goal is to try to get a national law to outlaw these practices in the United States and actually criminalize them. And I've been doing a lot of activism also in family court. We just recently took me 11 years and about 60 grand to do this. But we finally got a constitutional amendment in Texas, which enshrines parental rights as a fundamental right. So it's just as fundamental a right as freedom of speech or anything else. That's what I'm doing.
All right. And throughout all of that, you went from being a conservative to being a nationalist. So, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So that's an incredible story. People hear about this kind of thing in the abstract, but I think it's good to get a tangible, concrete story, an example of it. And you seem like quite a particular example of it because you've fought back quite effectively. So let's start at the start. You said 11 years. How did all of this begin?
You know, if you go onto YouTube, your audience can search for Mommy Says I'm a Girl. And that is it's actually the first iPhone video that I ever took. It went mega viral worldwide. I'm an Orthodox Christian like Jay Dyer. So Eastern Orthodox Christians in Russia, Serbia, other places were very interested in the story. It was perplexing to them how this could happen to an Orthodox boy in the so-called Bible Belt of the United States, right? And that's me with my son.
What year was this? Like, just to grind it historically.
2014. Yeah, end of 2014. That's when she started transitioning him. The video was taken just after his third birthday. And my boys were born in 2012, and it's just him telling me that at 3 years old that his mother says he's a girl and he believes her. And that's how it all started. I told her she couldn't do that. She's a pediatrician. And so she used her relationships with licensed care providers to force me out of the home. And then she began a campaign of terror where she used the family court with false accusations of domestic violence and all sorts of things, authoritarian parenting. And what's really funny is, you know, it just shows you that if you do the right things, they really can't pin anything on you. You have to react to them. What happened was I was in a deposition, and the law firm I was fighting is called Coons Fuller. Coons Fuller is the family law firm that they sic on political opponents in the state of Texas. They're funded by some of the biggest funders of the Republican Party. And that whole establishment apparatus came after me. And I was in a deposition facing one of their lawyers named Jessica Janicek. And you'll find I name names. And I've never been sued for libel. So it tells you I'm telling the truth. I'll name names here. And I was sitting in a deposition. And I realized that being calm was a weapon against these people, because what everything is designed to do is to get you to act like a man. And then they're going to say that you're potentially violent. So I was able to just stay calm. You know, I just say the Lord's Prayer and stay calm. And so they were never able to pin that on me. But we went through a psychological exam. It's pretty common in divorces in Texas. You get what's called a custody evaluation. I paid about $120,000 for that custody evaluation. That guy's name is Blake Mitchell. He practices out of Frisco, Texas, and he still works in three counties in Texas for the courts. He went into the court and lied and said that my ex-wife was not trying to transition my son to a girl, even though I showed him that video that's on YouTube when you search for Mommy Says I'm a Girl. Fortunately, that's happened repeatedly. Every psychologist that they've assigned has lied. Fortunately, I've been able to prove it every time, so they set all their findings aside. They set his findings aside. But still, he said that I made a false accusation against her for saying that she was transitioning my son to a girl, and on that basis, I got limited time with my sons. Then she started really ramping up the transition. I would take my son to school.
I think we should maybe reverse slightly, because people will be wondering, what was the background to this? I mean, did your wife prior to this seem reasonable and rational?
No. Here's what I think happened. I think there's a thing in California. She's from Hawaii, and she lived in California for a long time. There's a thing in California where women will basically marry men, and they're just sperm donors. But instead of them paying a sperm donor, you're a sperm donor that pays child support. And I think this was set up before I ever married her, actually. And there was a whole set of steps that were late. Like, for example, she convinced me to move. So I sold a house, moved. Well, it just so happened that where we moved was 700 feet across the line into Dallas County, which is literally a communist jurisdiction in the state of Texas. If we'd have been 700 feet the other way in the Denton County, where I'm sitting right now, they would have actually probably arrested her for child abuse. So this is all planned. This was planned years in advance. We went to trial. I pretty much lost the trial, the first trial and the divorce trial. But then she started ramping things up. So I would take my kid to school, and the school was cooperating with her. They would change my son into girls' clothes without my permission or knowledge. And they transitioned my son to a girl for a year without me even knowing about it. And they were making him use the girls' restroom and everything. Like, I would literally bring him to school in boys' clothes, and the teacher would change him into a dress, literally. I filed a lawsuit against the school, but it turns out in the state of Texas, you can't sue school districts. This last legislative session earlier this year, we were able to get that changed. So now you can sue school districts in the state of Texas. They don't have the immunity that the state has. So we went back to trial in 2019. And at that trial, in the 255th District Court in front of Judge Kim Cooks, the top experts in transgender medicine in the world showed up to that little courtroom in Dallas County. I had a guy named Dr. Levine, who actually opened the first transgender clinic in America in 1974. And they shut that clinic down after 4 years because all their data showed that it was harming patients. They brought in Johanna Olson Kennedy, who at that time, notice I named names. Johanna Olson Kennedy, she ran the largest gender clinic in America. I shut that clinic down in California last year. I put them in a position where the lawyers said the lawsuit risk was too high and they closed the clinic. But she was their expert witness. I deposed her under oath and I asked her one question. And based on that answer to that one question, they refused to put her in front of a Texas jury. And here was the question. I said, Johanna Olson Kennedy, what is your medical justification for amputating healthy body parts from children? And here's her answer, quote, if the body parts cause psychological distress, they're not healthy and we can medically remove them, unquote. So they were essentially deprived of their expert witness by that one question. I won the 2019 trial. I got 50-50 custody, a check on all medical procedures, and no child support. The liberal judges in Dallas County got really pissed about this. The whole Texas government establishment got pissed that I won. And at that time, I was running for office in Texas against an establishment candidate, and they were not going to let me win this case. So what they did is they transferred my case sua sponte into the 301st District Court with Judge Mary Brown, who I will henceforth refer to as Bloody Mary Brown. Bloody Mary Brown did not implement the jury verdict, which gave me 50-50 custody and a check on all medical procedures. Instead, she cooperated with Coons Fuller to illicitly strip me of all parental rights to the point where I wound up on supervised visitation. The judge even chose a supervisor for my visitation that was a transgender man in a dress. And my son, I was not allowed to address my son by his real name. I could not pray with my son, and I could not change him out of a dress at the visit. So I told them to go fuck themselves. And so when I did that, the judge then waited 6 months, and then they brought another motion, and they said, well, Mr. Younger is not availing himself of the plentiful visits allowed by the court that cost $500 a visit with this ugly man in a dress. And so Mr. Younger has abandoned his children. And that's when the judge cut off all phone contact and allowed my ex-wife to move to California, right after, 1 month after, California passed its transgender kidnapping bill. So in the United States, many of the conservative law firms have warned conservative parents to not take their children to California, because if the state of California deems that your child is gender expansive or gender dysphoric, and your state does not trans the kid, does not support so-called trans rights, California will not allow the child to leave California. So it was a big deal that she was being allowed to move to California, because it would essentially remove all rights I would ever have to my children. I took that all the way up to the Texas Supreme Court. Two justices, which are enthralled to the establishment and the governor of Texas, Justice Blacklock, who is now the chief justice. He's running for office again here in Texas, and I'm trying to make sure he doesn't get reelected. Justice Young and Justice Busby all voted against me and allowed my son to move to California, absurdly claiming in their opinion my son was in no greater danger of being transitioned to a girl in California than he would be in Texas, where it was illegal. And that's how we got to California. I had a trial there, which was completely corrupt. They have probably one of the most corrupt judiciaries in the United States. It's even more corrupt than the D.C. judiciary. California essentially runs as a dictatorship. The way the judiciary works in California, just to give you an example of how corrupt America actually is right now, judges are supposed to be elected in California. We elect judges in Texas, too. In California, though, judges resign 30 days before they're required to file for reelection. This allows the governor to appoint someone. So, in effect, Gavin Newsom has had complete control of the entire judiciary of the state of California. And that's one of the reasons why all the corruption happened in my case. I was unable to appeal in California because the court reporters that maintain the court records refused to give me my records, and I would have to file a million-dollar lawsuit against the Court Reporters Association. Plus, I would have to get permission from the Attorney General in California to sue, because it's considered a quasi-governmental commission. So that's what they do. They just slowly wear you down. So I haven't been able to see my sons. I know James has been chemically castrated. He has not been physically castrated, to my knowledge, although under the California Safe at Home Act. So the fact that I will not affirm that my son James is a girl is considered a form of domestic violence in California. So it's actually very dangerous for me to visit my son. If I were to be convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence in California, I would permanently lose my right to possess a firearm, permanently lose my right to reside within 1,000 feet of a school or any government building. I would lose all licensure. I can never hold employment or contract with the government or work for a company that does any contracting with the government. There's a lot of ramifications to a domestic violence conviction. So they use that Safe at Home Act to hide all my son's information from me. So I hope my son is listening out there right now. James, I love you very much. I've not forgotten you. I will never forget you. And I'm going to continue to fight for you. And one day when you're 18, we'll see each other and we'll walk as men together in the future.
That's an incredible story. Admirable in your persistence in fighting back, but also tragic in the what has been done, what has happened here. I guess one question off the bat is, it sounds surprising to me as an outsider to America. First of all, America itself has a reputation, from the point of view of Europe, has a reputation for being quite right wing and conservative.
Yeah.
And yet the thing is happening, but we already knew that from, you know, Matt Walsh's material and so forth.
Right.
But Texas specifically has a reputation for being a right wing state, conservative.
Yes.
Dallas, it doesn't surprise me that an urban center is more progressive. That's quite typical. But it is surprising about Texas. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a myth at this point that Texas is a right-wing state? Is that something from the past that has been completely erased?
Well, no. It's both are actually true. It's both left liberal and it's right-wing. And let me explain how this works. And this will clarify, I think, for your audience, how American politics actually works. One of the things you'll find about me, if you go to my YouTube channel at Jeff Younger Show, I'm a realist show. I talk about how things actually work and how power is actually exercised, and it rarely follows the law. So here's what's going on. The donor class of the Republican Party, the Miriam Adelsons, the Paul Singers, people like that, are far left. Everybody knows that. They're all far left Zionists, right? And they're atheists. They're basically atheists. They're atheistic Jews and far left Zionists. So, for example, Paul Singer. Paul Singer is the largest donor to the Republican Party. And Paul Singer started the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest and most powerful transgender rights organization in the world. It's the one that got quotas to hire trans people in corporations. I mean, that's a Republican that did that. So what you have is a far-left donor base, far-left Zionist donor base, right? And then you have the voting base of the Republican Party, which is far right. And let me just tell you how far right. It took me over 6 years to get a law passed in Texas criminalizing these procedures on kids. You'd think in Texas it would have been done instantly. The way I did it is I went into some of the far west counties in Texas, and those counties, you know, only 100 votes can swing an entire election because there's only 1,000 people living in some of these counties. I mean, I literally had sheriffs show up and tell people to put their guns away. I mean, they were literally going to go shoot people in Austin. Okay, that's how far right-wing Texas actually is, right? And sure enough, when we had rallies in Austin, everybody showed up with guns. Like, they intimidated lawmakers. That's how far right it is. So if you're in, let's say you're in the Texas legislature, or you're in the federal legislature, right, and you're a Republican, you have a far-left donor base and you need the money to get elected, you have a far-right a voting base that you need to get elected. How do you deal with that problem? Here's how you do it. You pass laws that have arcane loopholes in them, so they have no effect. So then you go to the donor class, and for example, with my bill, they took three sentences out of my bill. That would have classified these procedures as felony child sexual abuse, and in Texas, that'll get you life in prison on the first offense. Okay. So it would have put doctors in prison for doing this forever, right? So they'll go to the donor class and say, look, we left loopholes. We took out the criminalization. So now parents can take their kids to California and to Colorado. They can cut their kids' balls off and bring them back to Texas. So it has no effect. You can still give me $1 million and I can get elected again. Then they go to their voting base and they say, hey, look how right-wing and conservative I am. I just outlawed transgender surgeries on kids. Yay, you know? And here's the problem we have. Here's the fundamental. So that's how it's actually done. That's why we get bills closing the border at the federal level and nothing fucking happens, okay? That's why we get bills supposedly reducing or eliminating H-1B. Nothing fucking happens because they're designed to not do. They're always designed to have loopholes. So here's what actually happens, though, with the voting class, the voting base. I've been doing Republican politics since Reagan, so we're going back into the 80s, all right? And I mean, I actually lived in black communities and did outreach for the Republican Party in the 80s. Like, that's how much of a true believer I was and how stupid I was. So what happens is you have a highly propagandized right-wing voter base who still pretends, and in some cases in a religious way, believe that the Constitution is how the government works. And the government hasn't been limited by our Constitution since the Civil War, definitely not since the New Deal with FDR and Wilson, and certainly not in the post-war consensus after World War II, which completely demolished the Constitution. So the government just does its power base, and the way it exercises power just doesn't work that way anymore. But they have been very clever. Like, you know, in my county right now, literally this week, they were running constitutional training classes for Republicans, which just convinces them that this is how it works. This is how it works. It has nothing to do with it. And the fact that conservatives have not been able to escape out of that propaganda box has been the source of power both for the Zionists and for the leftist donors, because they can always get what they want.
It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? Similar stuff happens in Britain, mm-hmm. I think all over the West, really, where there's a notion of the government and how it works, which is in the public's minds, and it is continually encouraged. They're continually told that this is how it works. But really, it's a mirage and has been for a very long time.
Very long time.
I mean, I think this is part of what MAGA, the appeal of MAGA, mm-hmm. is all about for the American public. Yeah. They're realizing that it doesn't work the way they were told, and the whole system needs to be overhauled. I mean, for example, the law that you just talked about, where okay, you can't castrate your child in Texas, but you can take your child to Colorado or California and do it. How would you prevent parents doing that?
It's very simple. If they had put those three sentences, left them in, that I put in there that classified it as felony child sexual abuse. Listen, if you're a Texan, okay, and that means you've lived here for a year. You become a Texas citizen when you've lived here for a year. And you take your kid to Thailand and you sexually abuse your kid in Thailand, the instant you set foot back at the DFW airport, you'll be arrested. They'll put you in a fucking hole underneath the jail. 6 months later, you'll get life in prison, and we'll put you in where Bubba will anally rape you for the rest of your life. That's how we treat people like that here, okay? And so that's why they did it. You can't leave Texas to commit felonious acts against minors, okay? You can't do that here. We have strict laws against it, and Texas is very serious about this. So, you know, Texas is an interesting state. You can do almost anything you want in Texas as long as you don't bother other people. But if you bother other people or hurt other people, you're going to get your ass kicked here. The law will come down on you like a hammer. So pretty much in Texas, you either don't have anything happen to you at all, or a sledgehammer hits you in the head. There's just no in between here. And that's why they took out the criminal provisions. What they said instead was, they said the Texas Medical Board can revoke the license of a doctor. But see, that has no effect on a parent. Parents are not even mentioned in that. So it was the criminal penalties that would be the key to avoiding that. And yeah, I think it's same in the UK. If you were to take a kid from the UK and you took them to a jurisdiction and you've sexually abused them and brought them back, probably in the UK, I think your laws are the same. You'd be arrested for child trafficking, basically.
I'd be amazed if it didn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the loophole they left with this one. They did the same. We, you know, I don't know how you guys feel, but we in Texas, we don't much like abortion. So same thing with abortion. You know, they come to the voting base and say, we passed a law that outlawed abortion. Well, no, we didn't. We outlawed the medical procedure. And we did that right after abortion pills became the predominant way that abortions happen. So it's still legal for a mother to kill her child with an abortion pill, okay? But it's illegal for a doctor to do it. So you go into a Planned Parenthood clinic. We still have them. There's some right down in Dallas. I mean, I know where they're at. I've protested at them. And you go down there, and they'll slide a little pill. They have a video camera. They slide the pill through a tray. The woman picks up the pill and takes it. They have proof the doctor didn't administer it. Perfectly legal in Texas to kill your baby. But they tell the voting base that we've outlawed it. This is the kind of stupid shit that Republicans fall for all the time.
Yeah, this is all about the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And yeah. I think conservatives historically keep falling for this trick where the letter of the law is observed, but the spirit of it is completely contravened.
That's right.
And trashed. I think this is just something that right wingers in general need to massively wake up about. Activists on the left are just trashing everything. They're just trashing our way of life. But honestly,
we have this thing, you know, in America, like, what if conservatives conserved? They haven't conserved. Exactly. Nothing's been conserved. Like, nothing has been conserved, right? So, you know, this is why I changed the words that I use around 2016. You know, because you'll hear this a lot among in Republican circles here, conservative circles. Think tanks use it. You'll hear it on CNN. We need more voter education. We need more voter education. No, we don't. What we need is counter propaganda. We need to use propaganda techniques to modify the attitudes and dispositions of right-wing people so they don't fall for left-wing tricks like this, right? But that involves the modification of attitudes and dispositions. It's not intellectual positions. And that's the big insight that I have come to, you know, in the last, you know, 10 years, talking to people about this transgender issue. It's about attitudes and dispositions. It has nothing to do with ideas.
Yeah, exactly. It's the attitude, because the conservative, I think, naturally has a very sleepy sort of attitude.
Correct.
He just wants to be left alone.
Yes.
And he definitely doesn't want to raise a stink about anything.
No.
But the left do. They're absolutely prepared to do
it. They don't care. You know, I get it all the time. I recently got reinstated on Facebook, you know, and I basically get tone policed all the time by Republicans. The left knows exactly what I'm doing, and they avoid me, right? But these conservatives have no idea what I'm doing, and they'll start tone policing me. So you can't say things like that. You got to be nice, you know, and this kind of thing. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm doing counter propaganda. I'm trying to modify people's attitudes and beliefs. I'm not trying to make arguments.
See, this is what we used to call cuckservatives in the alt-right days. It's the conservative who ends up doing the left's work for them.
That's right.
Against his own people who have more balls than him.
Right on. That's our problem. You know, and so when I ran for office here in Texas, just to give you an idea of how terrified they were of me, I'm just in House District 63. I live in Flower Mound, Texas. And it's a small House districts, not very big. It's only a half of a county. And the governor of Texas spent $4.5 million to keep me out of office in this little bitty district. Now, here's why. There's two reasons for it. One is I had consultants call me from Austin to tell me what was being talked about in the governor's mansion. One, they didn't want to create any kind of precedent for the kind of politics that I do, which is power politics. I don't make arguments. I coerce people to do what needs to be done. I learned that my first time trying to lobby for a transgender bill. I got through out of the Capitol, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to make you pass it. So I made them do it. The governor didn't want to sign that bill. I made him sign it. He had to sign it, right? So I talk about coercion and making people do things. I don't talk about persuading anybody. I mean, I remember sitting in front of a guy. I'm literally trying to persuade this guy that you can't cut the balls off a little boy. Fuck him. You know, I'm going to make him sign a bill. And sure enough, he had to be a sponsor on my bill or he would have lost his election. The second thing is, when it came to the border issue, I went down and talked to the Texas National Guard. And the Texas National Guard said in 4 months they could landmine the entire southern border of Texas. And that would have completely ceased all illegal alien traffic across the border. Everybody would have to come in through a legal port of entry. And the fact of the matter is, the deep state in America uses the Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona open border for specifically to run guns and drugs. So they're never going to let us close that border. They're not going to do it. What's happening is, in Mexico, essentially there's a civil war going on. The Zeta cartel basically took over the Mexican government, and they own the Mexican government. They were created by the Iran-Contra thing, if you recall that, where we went down to Nicaragua and we funded gun sales with cocaine sales. Who did we sell the cocaine to? We sold them to Mexican Special Forces people because that's who our CIA knew. And that created the Zeta cartel. These guys got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars from that cocaine. And they took over the Mexican government about 10 years ago. We've been sending guns to the Sinaloa cartel to create a balance of power between those cartels. And all those guns get run through Texas. They actually go through my hometown of Plainview, Texas. That's where they run them through on trucks. And they go down there and they give guns to the Sinaloa cartel. And the Sinaloa cartel gives them gives guns. And then the Sinaloa cartel gives them drugs, which they sell in the United States. So they're never going to let us close that border like that. So when I put that landmine proposal out there and I could back it up with actually what the U.S. military could do, which is 4 months, you could do it. It just terrified them. So they'll spend any amount of money to keep me out of office. And that turned the whole establishment against me as well.
Right. Amazing. It seems to me that you've had a lot of experience of very practical lawfare work, yeah, battling against the government at different levels. And it seems to me that you've had some success with it as well. Yeah. So what I would ask you is, this is something that I think we on the right need to do an awful lot more of. And so an example like yours is very helpful, very useful. What would you advise, what would you say you need in terms of resources and character traits in order to achieve what you have achieved?
So, yeah, okay, you want to talk about these attitudes and dispositions first, and then we can talk about organizing principles, because I don't believe we can organize like the left, and I have a totally different idea. And I'll give you an example of how I used those principles in Texas to overcome the establishment here. I mean, I literally overcame Paul Singer here, who's one of the richest donors to the Republican Party. So first of all, one of the big things about conservatives is that they highly value social harmony. And the reason for that is right-wingers really understand what happens when authority breaks down. You know, it becomes the Sudan. And right-wingers understand this. Leftists don't understand this. All these stupid anarchists and these libertarian anarchists, they don't understand what anarchy actually looks like. Anarchy looks like women in cages being sold. That's what anarchy looks like. You know, that's what happened in Sarajevo. It's exactly what happened, right? Anarchy is ruled by the strong. So because of that, conservatives don't want to make waves. So the first thing I think that conservatives have to get over is the idea that they should not be offensive or make waves. That's the first thing. The second thing is to get over this think tank bullshit, right? Every conservative I meet that when they first like move from the left to conservatives, what's the first thing they want to do? Write a fucking book. You know, what's the first thing that happens when a conservative moves to the right? What do they want to do? They want to write a fucking book, you know? Don't, you know, resist that urge, right? Being on the right is not about knowing things. Being on the right is just observing the world and saying, well, that's how it really is. It's not an intellectual thing. It's an observational thing. It's an observation that precedes the ideas themselves, right? So that's the second thing. Just stop this stupid intellection and then bias yourself for action instead of talking. And how do you do that? Stop using arguments. Stop arguing and making arguments. The left just doesn't give a shit about your arguments. Believe it or not, I love the UK, man. I go to the UK a lot. When you go talk to your MP, he doesn't care about your arguments. He doesn't give a damn about your arguments. He wants to make money by being in office, and he wants to have power by being in office, right? What you have to have an attitude of is when you go talk to your MP, you have to say, well, what are the means of coercion, not what are the means of persuasion, right? We can't pretend like we're in a democracy. We're in an oligarchy. We're in a plutocratic oligarchy, okay? And so you have to go to the MP and you have to say things like this. And I've done this here in Texas, right? You go in, you have a conversation. You say, hey, I got to get this bill done because I'm trying to protect kids. I had one guy that was very recalcitrant. He was blocking me in committee. I found his largest donor, because they have to report that. So I drove in Texas to the county where his largest donor was. He owns banks in the central part of Texas, and he makes a lot of money loaning money to farmers and ranchers. So I set up an appointment with him. And it was kind of on false pretenses. And then I told him who I was and what I was doing, and he tried to throw me out of his office. We were on the second floor of one of his banks. And I said, well, go out and look out the window of your office before you throw me out. And he went over there and he looked out the window, and there were people passing out flyers to his customers who were driving into his bank. And I gave him one of the flyers. And it was a picture of a rancher castrating a bull with a knife. And it had the banker's head face superimposed on the rancher. And below it said, this banker supports castrating kids. And on the back, it had all the details about him supporting this guy and doing this shit. And I said, do you see that billboard that's right across from your bank? I want you to call the owner of the billboard. And it turned out he knew the guy. He called him and he said, yeah, Mr. Younger's already secured a lease on that billboard. I said, I'm going to put that up on that billboard. I'm going to take every single customer out of your bank. And I said, those people are actually giving coupons to other banks where they can get free checking and discounts at other banks because you want to castrate little kids. I will run you out of business in this county. I said, I've talked to all the gas stations around where you live and that big five-bedroom house that you live in. Those gas stations have told me they're not going to sell you gasoline anymore. Where are you going to fill your car up in this county? And guess what happened the next day? The guy in Austin, the legislator, he signed on to my fucking bill and it got through committee. Okay. I didn't try to persuade these dumbasses that, you know, you can't castrate kids. I exercised power against them. Right. And one of the nice things about the grassroots power, one of the nice things about that, they have no defense against it. They have no defense against it. There's no way you can propagandize in favor of castrating little boys. Right. So we need to focus on issues where it's very difficult for the other side to propagandize. Like in the UK, raping little girls is very difficult to propagandize against. You should be going to MPs saying, you know, I noticed that you, you're not pushing a bill in Parliament to protect young girls from these grooming gangs. And I noticed that you voted against a commission to investigate the government's role in that. I think we're going to have some workshops where we talk about how you're in favor of child rape, and we would like you to come and offer your perspective so that it's fair. How would you like to do that with your constituency? You need to start finding places like that where they can't propagandize against you. Then you can exercise power, not persuasion. Does that make sense? Three principles right there.
Yeah, it's amazing. Because a lot of people would never think of doing this kind of thing. They would think, well, it's too dangerous. There'll be something, there'll be some obstacle. I'll get punished for doing it. Mm-hmm. They'll turn my life upside down, etc., etc. What would you say to that, apart from the obvious?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, regardless of what you think about Tommy Robinson's Zionism and all that, and whether, you know, what his relationships are with the deep state possibly, I don't know any of that. But whatever you might think, what has happened when he went to jail? Did he get more powerful or less powerful?
He got more powerful.
He got more powerful. You know, and that's one of the – well, look, I'm facing prison right now because I've said California says I have to pay for the chemical castration of my own son as medical child support. And I said, well, fuck you. I'm not paying it. Go fuck yourself. And I told the administrator on the phone, you know. And I said, you're telling me to castrate my kid? Yeah, you're a fucking asshole. I'm not paying you shit, right? And so eventually I might get 2 years in prison. I believe they'll bring a criminal complaint of child abandonment, which will get you 2 years in prison in California. And I'll go into the LA County Jail, which is one of the worst jails in America. But the reason I think that they're very hesitant to do that, and they could have brought a case against me for the last 2 years. They haven't done that. I think they know it'll be like when Darth Vader cuts down Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, what did he say? I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Can you imagine jailhouse interviews of a guy being jailed because he won't castrate his own son? Like it would destroy entire political careers, even in California, right? So I think we just need to all just get over this idea that, you know, so what? You go to jail. Guess what? When you go to jail, you have lots of leisure time. You have what we call three hots in a cot. You get three meals a day. You're going to lose weight. You're going to get in shape. Right? And guess what? You have plenty of time to write that fucking book. You're going to have lots of leisure time. So I think we should just get over being scared of going to jail and use power against the establishment. And we do have it. Like, there are areas where they cannot propagandize, and we can use power against them, and we should.
Yeah, definitely. What, in retrospect, I mean, you've had, 11 years experience now. In retrospect, was there anything that you think you shouldn't have done? Any tactics that you now think were unwise? Anything that you'd do differently, basically?
I did not understand early on the level of judicial corruption. And I did not understand how the bar works in the United States. So the Bar Association in the United States is unique, okay? It's a private organization that is empowered by the government to regulate a state function. So lawyers in the United States are actually officers of the court, but they're not regulated by the court. They're regulated by a private organization called the Bar. And each state has its own Bar Association, and there's a federal Bar Association. I did not understand the degree to which America had become an oligarchy. And there's some nuance to that. And I think this is true in the UK and Europe as well. I think we could generalize this actually to the entire Anglosphere and Europe. So for people, which, you know, my dad used to call this he called it the waterline on a ship, you know, because all the lower cost accommodations were below the waterline of the ship. If you're below the waterline in a company and you make a mistake, what happens? Somebody fires you. If you're above the waterline in a company and you make a mistake, you go fire somebody else. Okay? That's the way the world actually works. So if you're not in one of these cartels, right? A banking cartel, the legal cartel, if you're not a billionaire, you're not a Zionist billionaire, you are actually ruled by judges. You're not ruled by any democratic institutions. And I think you're finding that out in the UK right now. You've got people who say I don't want to get you in trouble. They say the F word on social media or something. And then who uses power against them? It's the courts that use power against them. If you're below the waterline in society, you're not a billionaire, you're not in a cartel, you're not an oligarch, then you're ruled by judges. Okay, so you actually live in a critarchy if you're a normal person. You live in an oligarchy if you're above that. So what you have is a critarchy in service to a plutocratic oligarchy. So the question then becomes, well, what's going on with the judiciary? And I just didn't understand that. Like, I didn't understand that the judiciary was the main mechanism by which they exert power against the citizenry. I thought it was more like the police, but it's actually the courts. And so it turns out judges in Texas and in the federal courts have absolute immunity, even if they commit felonious acts that result in the death of a person by execution, and you can prove they did that, you know, as a crime, and they did that intentionally. They're immune from prosecution. In the United States, also prosecutors have absolute immunity. So once you give somebody absolute immunity, you're in the ultimate unaccountable position. So judges and prosecutors wind up being the main mechanism by which they enforce actions against us. So what I would have done over again is I would have taken steps to make myself very difficult to prosecute. And I would have made myself extremely difficult to deal with in court. And I could have made it a lot tougher on the judges. I could have made opposing counsel spend millions of dollars, and I didn't do that at first.
So it's not just about avoiding spending your own money. It's about forcing them to spend theirs as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that I became a pro se litigant. So look, you spend 6 years in a courtroom three times a month, which is basically what I did. I mean, I've spent $1.5 million. Trying to protect my sons. So, I mean, I was in courtrooms literally three times a month for 6 years. Okay. Eventually you learn how to run trials, you learn how to run hearings. And so I started doing it on my own, and I'm not paying a lawyer $600 an hour anymore. And they're paying it. And I ran them through it. So basically what I found out in California, in my federal lawsuit, California, which was dismissed on an abstention doctrine, That's another thing they use in federal court. They do not allow certain cases to go up. The federal judiciary is terrified of some of these cases. So they use abstention doctrines to keep cases out that they don't want. So, but there was a mistake made. I couldn't figure out how my ex-wife could afford Morris Forrester, which is one of the most expensive law firms in California. They represent Google and Meta, for example. And these are like, you know, $1,800 an hour lawyers. And she's got three of them. Okay. Well, one of the paralegals made a mistake. And instead of putting some additional email addresses in the BCC field, she put it in the CC field. And that's when I found out that my ex-wife was funded by foundations, funded by Paul Singer, by George Soros, and by the Adelson family. So she's been funded by all these people, right? And that shows you another big difference here, right? Our elites suck. Our elites are objectively inferior to leftist elites, right? Leftist elites go to the bottom of the food chain where the cases are being made, where laws being made in the courts, and they put money in there, right? Antifa gets bailed out of jail, but right? Our elites, I couldn't get a single right-wing law firm to take my case in California. None of them would take it. I had one right-wing law firm literally calling experts in the UK. I tried to get one of your experts who did the CAST report, which was the first large-scale systematic review that showed transgender science is junk science. They literally called experts in the UK and told them not to work for me. These are right-wing law firms. Like, we just have shitty elites. Our billionaires class is objectively inferior. That's why I wanted to get back to this idea that we can't organize the way the left does. They have the support of an excellent elite class that will fund them at the lowest level, right? Our guys won't. So how can we organize? Well, first of all, conservatives and right-wingers are not really amenable to mass organizing, right? Just our attitudes and dispositions make us clannish and actually suspicious in some ways of outsiders. So I advocate that we should use when I was in the Marine Corps, we called swarming tactics. Guys should operate in 3 to 5 man groups. They should loosely cooperate when it makes sense. That's what I did here in Texas. Texas, I shut down their phone systems 3 times in Austin. They had to spend $250,000 to put in a digital phone trunk because I kept shutting their phones down. And I did that by essentially I created a private social media server which allowed tens of thousands of people to spontaneously cooperate in small groups without me even touching it. I don't even want to know what you're doing. In fact, I would rather not know because I want it to be unpredictable to the legislators, right? We should use swarming tactics and we should operate in small groups, and that allows us to be unpredictable. And it also means that if one group falls to leftist propaganda, it won't spread. Right? That's the first thing. The second thing is the left has just completely perfected entryism. So any group that's organized democratically with a board or elected board members or anything like that, they can take that over. And the right has shown it can never stop them. It's never successfully stopped them. I think William F. Buckley was the one who said, ironically, because his organization was taken over by the left, he said, any organization that isn't explicitly right wing will become left wing because the left will just take it over, right? So we should not create mass organizations. We should not create foundations the way the left does. They'll just take them over and use them against us. Instead, we should, and I don't know if I can say this, but let's just say, the way terrorists organize. They organize in 3 to 5 man teams and they spontaneously cooperate. We should do that kind of thing.
Yeah, just to be clear, you're obviously not advocating terrorism. You're advocating that we learn to operate in small groups.
Only in the way they organize. All I care about, because it's resilient to the kinds of pressures that the left can put on us. I don't advocate violence of any kind. Although I have to say, in Texas, I do like my Second Amendment. I carry a gun everywhere I go. And I worry about my fellow right-wing men in the United Kingdom. I worry about their safety in their own country.
Yeah, yeah. That's a whole other thing. Yeah. And I take the point. I was going to see that you've sort of addressed what I was going to ask next, which is about the matter of lawfare and funding. Now, I agree with you that there isn't nearly enough. See, the thing is, if you listen to the left, you would think that the right is just full of money, full of billionaires funding everything. I've never seen any evidence of this. As the way I see it is exactly as you describe, that there's not nearly enough funding of so many worthy projects and organizations. It just doesn't happen. And so I was going to ask you about the matter of lawfare and funding. How do you, and you've touched on it, but would you like to elaborate on that? Because a lot of people would think, I can't even get started on this because any sort of thing like this, I know, costs a fortune. So what would you say about that?
Well, I think if you think in terms of conventional politics and you view politics as persuasion, where you have to use the means of mass communication to persuade people to vote a certain way, that takes a lot of money. There's no question about it. But if you think about politics as a form of coercion, and you can find ways to bring power that doesn't involve money, there's three things that these guys care about. It's very simple, very simple. They care about power. If you can take power away from them, they'll do whatever you tell them to do. Okay? They care about money. If you take their money away from them, they'll do anything you tell them to do. And they care about their reputation because it's how they get reelected. So if you can take away their reputation, they'll do anything that you tell them to do. It actually turns out to not be very difficult to find one of these to take away from somebody. Let me give you a concrete example. There was some debate over whether the governor was going to sign the bill that I passed here in Texas. Okay. I went to a donor event, went in a tuxedo, you know, there in my shiny black cowboy boots that I don't often wear, you know, black alligator cowboy boots and a tuxedo. And some donor walks up to me and I just happened to be standing next to him at the bar. And he said, "Oh, you're Jeff Younger. I've heard about you." And he said, and I knew this guy was a top donor to the governor of Texas. And he said, "Hey, how's the governor helping you?" I said, "You know, the governor hasn't called me. He hasn't helped me. And now there's some doubt whether he's going to sign that bill." This guy literally right in front of me pulls out his cell phone. I don't know who he really called, but here's what the conversation went like. It said, "Listen, you son of a bitch, you help this man get this bill signed or I'm going to pull $2 million out of your fucking account." He used the F word. And the next day, the governor signed my bill. Okay. So in the UK, you guys don't have a donor issue, but you kind of do. There's business relationships with these people. Have you identified that? How can you leverage that? It's just three things. They want power, money, and their reputation. And if you're not able to threaten any of those three things, you have no power. Right? Political power doesn't mean persuading people. It means you have the ability to put someone in office who will vote your way or to remove someone from office who is not voting your way. Those are the only two forms of legitimate democratic power. That's it. This is simple, right? It's like people say, well, how do you use the power of a pistol? You pull the trigger and you put a bullet through somebody's body. There's just very simple things here, right? So if you don't have the power to remove someone from office or to put someone in office, which entails removing somebody, then you have no political power. That's how you know. And there are only three mechanisms for achieving political power: money, reputation, and funds, taking funds from people. That's it. That's all you got. And it doesn't take a lot of money to threaten someone's reputation. It doesn't take a lot of money to get donors to be real careful about associating with somebody who's doing some sketchy stuff. "Hey, you're kind of looking like you're supporting the rape of young English girls. I don't know that we want to do this business deal now. This is making me uncomfortable."
On PR.
Yeah, yeah. And so those are the levers of power, and there's only two outcomes. There's three levers and two outcomes. You either install somebody in office or you remove them. That's it.
Amazing. I think you obviously we're being very concise and brief here, but I get the feeling that people could learn an awful lot from you and from your videos. I hope that people do look at your channel.
Thank you.
You talked about the various, and you don't seem like someone who wants to agonize over the various oppressions that have been imposed on him, but have you had any trouble with social media companies shutting you down, deplatforming you?
Yeah, I got deplatformed off of Facebook when I was running for office, actually. And they said I was being simultaneously anti-trans, and I was making when I threatened to landmine the southern border, they considered that a terroristic threat, and so they shut me down. And it took me almost like 5 years to get back on Facebook. But I'm back now. But yeah, I've effaced that. Even on X, I used to have close to 94,000 followers. I now have about 84,000. And my reach is just, I get almost no reach at all. I get more reach on Facebook, actually, than I get on X. So I'm definitely, X has those four tiers, and I'm in the fourth tier, no doubt about it. And that happened a long time ago.
You'd think that Elon Musk would be on your side, since he's had a similar experience with his own kids.
Yeah, I agree. This actually happened before he even bought the company. They sort of sent me an email and they told me that I was going to be reach restricted. So I don't know if he even knows about it, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it happened to him, right? But I'm pretty blunt, as you can tell, about how to do politics. And I think it scares a lot of the people in the establishment, because what I do works. I tell people tell me all the time, why don't you start a foundation? I'm like, why? It's going to be taken over by the left. There's one of the best histories people could read on the right is the history of Gamergate. And are you familiar with Gamergate at all?
Yeah.
So Gamergate, one of the basic principles they had is there's no leaders, So one of the propaganda techniques that gets used against the right, they'll elevate somebody and say, oh, that's the leader of the alt-right or whatever. And then they trash that person and destroy them, and that destroys the movement, right? So the Gamergate, this is the thing about autistic people. They don't have any ego. Autistic gamers have no ego, right? So people would call them and say, oh, I hear you're the leader of Gamergate. I'm from the New York Times. And they said, what are you talking about? I'm not a leader. I'm just a gamer, man. I just want fair journalism. And then they would hang up. Like, no, this is what we need to do. We need to organize in a way that's different than the left, and we keep copying them. And that's been the downfall. That's one of the things that I was very successful at in Texas, replicated in South Carolina and other states. It's proven, man. Do not create foundations. Don't centralize money. Don't do any of that stuff. We don't need to do that. All we have to be able to do is to take away their power, take away their money, or destroy their reputation. And they'll do whatever you want. You got them other balls. You can lead them. Remember what McNamara said about Vietnam? Right? If you want to win people's hearts and minds, grab them by the balls. And their hearts and minds go wherever their balls go. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. On the matter of funding, you've said that you don't need much of it, but could you have, I'm just thinking, on the off chance that any billionaires do watch this, could you have achieved more than you have?
Right.
Go on.
I actually advocate a VC model for right-wing political funding, not a foundation model. I think people should start small, prove that it works. Then you can go to a Series B founding. You get seed founding. You go to Series B founding. You show that you can gain traction in Series B. Okay, now we're going to give you Series A funding. Now you can scale. And then you can prove that it's actually going to achieve the results. The other thing, and this is very important, in terms of organizing principles, this is the ultimate importance for the right. You have to have a win only if you succeed, okay? So, for example, you look at a lot of the abortion foundations in America. They don't actually want to get rid of abortion because then they get all their donations go away. If they actually solve a problem, they lose all their money. So you have to have a big payout for the people, the founders of these things, when they achieve the political objective. Does that make sense? That is not a foundation model. The foundation model is about endowments, right? This is more of a VC funding model, whereas you only get your bit. We're going to give you a salary you can live on so you can do this full time, but you only get your $1 million payout when you get the fucking bill signed. When it goes into effect, you protected kids, or white people now have protections at law in the state of Texas. Okay, now you get your payout. Once that's in and it's working, you get your payout. But none of this bullshit where you get $1 million, you know, you get a six-figure salary and while you're working on stuff. No, it's going to be just like a startup company. When you go public, you get your payout. Until then, you have starvation allowance. So make it happen. I think we should adopt that. I think we should adopt that VC model. And I think that would create a massive dispersed swarm of people trying all kinds of creative and different things. And the things that work will get funded and will succeed.
Yeah, it would be a huge incentive mechanism. There'd be a huge amount of incentive, like reason to actually succeed.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's fascinating that this story and your example. And there are a few super chats. If anyone's got any more questions for Jeff, now would be the time to post them. Okay. Scott says, Woz, thank you so much for speaking to Jeff. I'd like you to ask him if he thinks these donation campaigns for women who have done things in public, like Sheila Hendricks, for example, does he think that these are a worthy cause, these donation campaigns?
No, and I've come out against them publicly against it. I think they're bad uses of our money, by and large. I think it's a little bit different now that Shiloh is actually has to fund a lawyer. You know what I mean? It's a little bit different funding legal expenses for people at the bottom who are fighting the fight. I have no problem with that. But making, you know, giving someone $800,000 because they use the N-word, like that's $800,000 that could have gone to all kinds of right-wing projects, small right-wing projects. And if you know, even two or three of those right-wing projects succeeded, it could have been huge, right? I don't think it's the right way. Let's put it this way. Would a VC have invested their money in that and expected to get a return from that? I don't think so.
I think the idea with those is that it's the opposite of what the left want.
Correct.
The left want that person to be punished, and they want them to suffer, to be unemployed and unemployable.
Yes.
So it's good for us in terms of morale and momentum if we instead reward people who do things like that. I think that's the thinking.
And it's a good argument for it too. Like, you know, sometimes you just have to do things because your people like it. You know, it motivates your people, right? And that's the, look, I gave some money to it, right? But in terms of us achieving long-term goals, is that going to do it? No.
Yeah. I see both sides. It's difficult. As you say, sometimes it's good to do things just for the sake of morale.
Definitely.
Especially on the right. I think people are often, there's a sense of defeat. Not so much nowadays, but definitely for the last 10 years.
Well, what Shiloh did, let me praise the Shiloh thing. Let me tell you what I thought was good about it. I just said, I don't think it's a good long-term investment of $800,000, but what it did do is it showed that there was a lot more solidarity on the right than anybody thought, that even you and I thought probably. It showed that there's a lot more solidarity there. And that might help future organizing of the kind I'm talking about. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So yeah, 100%.
So, I mean, it's an example of, I think that people should learn, we should try to learn the right lessons from things. And I think we should try to avoid failures, not just because of the immediate failure, but because of the effect that has on us,
right?
The morale effect. Yeah. So I think if we can turn something like that into a win, I think that's good. It's just good for morale.
Agreed.
Because then people are thinking, okay, what's the next stage? What's next? What can we achieve next?
Yeah.
Instead of perpetually being at step one. Okay. And then Soaker City said, it was strongly suggested that I abort my first son at 7 months. Long story, he had a brain bleed in utero. My partner and I declined the abortion and agreed to accept the consequences and love him no matter what. Today, we have a healthy little boy. Thanks for sharing, Jeff. We will prevail.
I love that. I mean, what could make us happier about the future than a young, right-wing, spirited boy who survived a leftist saying that he should have been murdered in the womb? I mean, that if that doesn't make you want to go out and fight, you're not in the fight.
Indeed. Dawn said, keep going, sir. Thank you. Right, I think she means you. But
we'll do.
Yeah. And Dardy said, interesting comment made by Jeff. I remember when Roe versus Wade was about to be overturned in America, a bunch of pro-life organizations were very angry because now they're about to lose all of their funding.
That's right. Yeah. You have to look, you have to align the incentives with the outcomes you want. So if you're only going to get your six-figure salary, if the problem exists, you're never going to get rid of the problem. That's why VCs don't give you lots of money when they're funding your company. When you're in a tech startup, you don't make a lot of money, man. You only make a lot of money when you finally go public or you get to the exit, because you got to take it across the finish line. Otherwise, these guys are incentivized to just draw out that tech process and never create the product. Why? They're making $250,000 a year. Why would they do it? So you got to make, you got to keep people hungry until they get to the goal, right? This is just basic stuff.
Yeah. It's killing the goose that lays the golden egg.
Yeah.
All right. And Dardy also said, I wonder if Jeff can comment on why Texas is viewed as a very right-wing or libertarian state, both in and outside America, but elect such terrible representatives, both state and federally.
Yep.
Surely it can't just be donors. It's horrendous. Some of the worst GOP politicians come out of Texas.
Well,
you already touched on that, but do you have any more to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about, you know, Senator Cruz, Senator Cornyn, for example, in the federal legislature. You can drive out into, you know, Wise County, Texas, which is near me. This is a county with a bunch of small towns in it. You know, it's a ranching and industrial county. All those people think Ted Cruz is amazing. They just think he's amazing. They're not getting the message that we on the right get. They're not listening to right-wing independent media. They don't get this. They go to here. Here's a great example. When I ran for office, and one of the reasons I was so formidable against the Democrats in my district when I ran, and they actually cooperated with a governor to keep me out. They crossover voted in the Democrats crossover voted in the primary. I actually went into Dallas County and used my middle name and went to a Democrat meeting. And this will just give you like the social dynamics of why normie conservatives elect shitty candidates. This is why. So I go in and I thought it was weird because, you know, Republican meetings are always in the evening. This was a noon. So on a Saturday. So I go in, it's in a gymnasium. I didn't know that. I'm in a suit because like I was used to Republican club meetings. I go in a suit. And there's these old ladies with those short butch haircuts, you know what I'm talking about? Real ugly lesbian ladies sitting there. And I went up and said, hey, I'm a Republican, but I've had it with the Republican Party, and I'm switching over to being a Democrat, and I just wanted to show up my first time at a meeting. And so the lady looked at me, and she said, wow, we'd love to hear these stories. What is the issue that brought you in here? And I said, the transgender issue. And she said, great. Go in the gymnasium and go to table 6. So I go in, table 6 is all the way across. I walk to the corner and there's two basically blue haired lesbians there. And they said, oh, we're so great. This is the issue we think is going to make the Democrats really win in Texas. So we're really glad that you're here. And they give me a playbook. They give me this binder and it's basically a playbook for how to take over my voting precinct. And they said, you know, if you can get 50 people in your voting precinct working with you, the Democratic Party will give you a website and we will pay for a luncheon every month for your 50 people. If you get 50 people and then you get 250 people to go to our protest events, we'll give you a $1,000 budget per year. And you can, they're doing the VC model I'm talking about, right? And the more success you get in your voting precinct, and it had a complete playbook. How do you talk to, if you're in a conservative district, how do you position gay rights to conservatives in your voting district? How, when they call you a socialist, what's the playbook for dealing with the conservatives in your voting district? They actually wanted me to show them a photo of my house because I had to look like a normal suburban person because that's the image they want to project. And they gave me some advice about what I could do with the landscaping in my yard and other things to really look the part. Like, they are organizing like that, okay? Now let me tell you what happens when you go to a Republican club meeting, okay? You show up at 6:30. You're going to listen to a charismatic speaker, usually to talk to you about something about the goddamn Constitution. It's going to be something about the Constitution. Second Amendment, 14th Amendment, you know, 19th Amendment in one case I went to. You know, they're going to do something about that. Then they'll have somebody maybe to inform you about some particular issue, property taxes or some shit. And there'll be a cocktail soiree prior to that. And you'll meet elected officials who are, you'll rub elbows with these guys, right? Judges will be there. The sheriff will show up, you know. You'll meet all these people. And you're going to get the impression they're all such nice guys and they're all on your side. Because by gosh, why wouldn't they be? They're in a cocktail soiree with you, right? And then everybody sits down in their suits and their ties and they listen to two speakers and then they get up and go home. That's a Republican club meeting.
Incredible.
That's the difference. That's the difference.
It's night and day.
Yeah. And so that's my answer to the question right there.
Very good. I mean, like I said at the start, conservatives are very sleepy. They think in terms of how to integrate with a system and get along with it and not ruffle any feathers. Whereas the left think about how to change the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Well, yeah, this has been a fascinating conversation, Jeff. So thanks very much for agreeing to appear. All right. I think we can wrap it up there. Let me just check. Yeah, that's it all for now. Okay. Well, this has been great. So
thanks.
Sorry, I'm muting myself. I hope this has been of practical use for people, and I hope that it gives them ideas, and I hope that they check out your social media, especially your YouTube channel.
Thank you.
This is, and I'm sorry about your son. Yeah. I wish you the best with that, and
thank you. And
I hope that you just keep going.
I'm going to keep going. Yeah, look, he's my son. He's owed everything I have. And he's going to get it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's leave it there. I'll be back in 45 minutes with Tuki. But in the meantime, Jeff Younger, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial 2025.
Been a pleasure.
Okay.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. How about helping your tireless host? Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Get the info you need at millennial.com/crypto. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the fire burning.